This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Jonathan Schanzer, the executive director of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, to comment on the headlines on both sides of the world. We begin in Jerusalem. Arab Muslim nations pledged to realize Trump's Gaza plan. Hamas examining it responsibly. That word is in quotes. Then we go to London. Israeli far right hits out at Benjamin Netanyahu. This is the Financial Times, the pink paper out of London. Over a U.S.-backed Gaza peace deal, subhead Finance Minister Smotrich describes proposal as, quote, resounding diplomatic failure that will, quote, end in tears. Jonathan, a very good day to you. Eight blind men and an elephant. That's what it appears today from the headlines. Everybody sees something they've prepared their audience for, not necessarily the next guys. Right now, I want to begin in the Oval Office the conversation between Mr. Netanyahu and Mr. Trump. My presumption is that there were no final details to hammer out. They had already arranged all of the peace plan between them. And Mr. Netanyahu, not commenting, did not in any fashion indicate that he was going against it. Have I made too many assumptions? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. No, I think the political situation in Israel is an interesting one right now. The peace plan trotted out by Donald Trump and approved by Benjamin Netanyahu essentially entailed two things that's gotten the attention of the Israeli right. One is the promise made by the Israelis to not annex parts of the West Bank as part of this agreement. That is not sitting well with Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. They both of them aspire to conquest of Judea and Samaria. The other part of it is that at one point, anyway, this 21-point plan, now 20-point plan, had stipulated that there would be automatic engagement with the West Bank Palestinian Authority. And this, of course, is not something that Bibi wants, nor do his coalition partners. It appears that Netanyahu was able to get a couple of adjustments made to the plan before it was rolled out. And one of those adjustments, and Netanyahu said this at the White House, that Gaza will not be run by the Palestinian Authority when it is all said and done, that it will be some other kind of government. I think it was important for him to be able to say that in order to keep his coalition together. But certainly the politics of Israel, as always, are raucous and making it more difficult for the prime minister to navigate the diplomatic proceedings in Washington. I think he came out in one piece, though, yesterday. He seemed to have gotten everything that he wanted. If you look at the plan calls for the release of every hostage within 72 hours of a deal being signed. It also calls upon Hamas to leave the Gaza Strip, to basically surrender and to end the war. These are two of Bibi's primary war aims, and it looks like this is a win, if you ask me.
We leave Washington and we head to the plan. It was 21, now it's 20 points, but critical is the top level of decision-making. And Tony Blair has been read into the script so far as either chairman or head of a panel that is independent but supervises the Gaza Strip. Tony Blair, what do we need to know about him and his qualifications in order to take on this enormous burden?
Well, it's interesting. Tony Blair, obviously, former prime minister of the UK, and he was heavily involved in the Annapolis peace process with George W. Bush back in the day. He was a key architect of the Iraq War. And so he's got a bit of a mixed bag in terms of his record in the Middle East. The last number of years, he has been engaged in private engagements across the region, specifically with the West Bank and Gaza and Israel. He's done a lot of business dealings. And there are people that believe that this man has enriched himself off of the back of the corruption of the West Bank Palestinian Authority. Somehow, I think he's come out clean on the other side of it after a number of years of people pointing fingers at him. He, I think, has established himself as a trusted person for both Bibi as well as for Trump. And so it looks like he's going to inherit this process. It will not be easy for him to achieve his goals. I think that this is one heck of a Herculean task that sits in front of him right now. But I guess it's better that we have somebody that has all these international connections, former head of state. There is some gravitas that he brings to this position. Let's hope he succeeds.
Is there a sense of historical irony among these players that it's the British mandate we're still struggling with, and that the breakup of the Ottoman Empire, as supervised by the victors, so-called, in the First War, are responsible for this tangle of loyalties and revenge? Does anybody comment on that, or am I being too bookish?
Well, you can never be too bookish, John, and it's one of the things that I love about your program. I think we need to acknowledge the fact that the Ottoman Empire has absolutely contributed to the mess of the map that we're looking at today. The French involvement, the British involvement, the U.S. involvement, for that matter. I mean, you've had a bunch of foreign powers that have tried to insert themselves and to try to fix this conflict in different ways over the last century. All have failed. What I think we need to be aware of right now is that there are two powers that I think matter the most regionally. One is Iran. That is a power that is on the wane. They have tried and apparently failed to conquer the region, to create that Shiite crescent stretching from Iran into Iraq, into Syria, into Lebanon, into Israel. Right now, it looks like that Shiite crescent is fading. It is only existing in small chunks. And the Iranian star appears now not to be what we thought it would be. However, at the same time, we see the resurgence of neo-Ottoman aspirations. The Turks are looking to reclaim parts of the Middle East, Syria being first and foremost among them. But keep an eye on Recep Tayyip Erdogan. This is a large military with capabilities that are compatible with NATO. This is a man who has vowed to raise a pan-Islamic army to fight against Israel because of what he perceived to be wrongdoings in Gaza. So I watch those two in particular. But really, if you ask me, the main regional power, the only one that really has not wavered, is Israel. And they continue to show that even amidst international pressure, amidst recognitions of a state of Palestine, amidst all of the UN onslaught that they just absorbed, that they are still willing to fight on, as they do in Gaza City at this very moment.
You identified two capitals that are outside my understanding of the Arab nation, that is Tehran and Ankara. So I want to go to the Arab point of view here. It appears that the Arabs have signed on to this, but what Arabs? That would require MBS out of Riyadh and I believe Al Thani out of Doha. Is that something that we can presume when they say the Arabs have signed on?
Yeah, I think the Saudis, the Emiratis, the Qataris, those are the primary Arab states. I think Egypt we could probably throw in there, as well as Jordan. These are all countries that don't want this war to continue, not necessarily because they're so concerned about the Palestinians, but primarily now, and this is pursuant to conversations I've had with some Gulf state representatives in recent weeks, they're worried about this war encroaching upon their own territory. In other words, when the Israelis attacked in Doha, targeting those Hamas officials in an apartment building, that was a wake-up call, I think, to much of the Arab world, that this war is not just limited to the Levant. This is not just Syria or Lebanon or, you know, or Jordan or Israel. This is now spilling over into the East. And the Emiratis, certainly the Qataris, the Saudis, they don't want this war to be their war. And so I think right now you're seeing a certain, let's say, seriousness of purpose on the part of some of these Arab states. They want the war to end because, quite frankly, they don't want to have to fight it. And that's giving Israel, I think, a bit more leverage than they had. So it's interesting. A lot of people have maligned the Israelis for having failed to hit their targets in Doha when they launched that attack some 2 weeks ago against Hamas figures there. It turns out that may have had a rather salubrious effect on the region. It looks like the region is now more nervous, which is a good thing, and it's making them want to end the war faster, which is a good thing. So let's see where this goes. It felt like Donald Trump was pushing on an open door.
I borrow a metaphor from our Russian adversaries. Escalate to de-escalate. Look at the map. Let's begin with the 12-day war between Israel and Iran. Let's go to the B-2 raid. Let's go to the strike on Doha. Let's go to Bibi organizing the professional army to attack Gaza City despite nearly a million people still living there. Escalation, all of them. Alarming headlines around the world. And now, a peace plan. Is there a methodology here, or am I being accidentally asymmetrical?
No, I think there is a methodology. Now, whether this was a deliberate tactic embraced by Netanyahu, I don't know. But I will say that there seems to be a logic here. In other words, up the pressure in Gaza City, on Hamas abroad, even on some of their patrons like the Qataris. This is going to create that escalation that perhaps prompts these less than brave countries to want to de-escalate. The only thing that I might differ with is whether that escalation to de-escalate works with Iran. The Iranian regime right now has suffered some pretty significant blows. Their pride is wounded. And right now it appears that they are determined to build back so that they can wage another war against Israel. I don't think they're looking to de-escalate. If you ask me, John, they're looking to escalate. And we're now hearing murmurs of the potential for another round between Iran and Israel, maybe sometime early next year. We're watching that. That's not something that I would welcome. I don't think that's a good thing for the region. I don't think it's a good thing for Israel. There are those in Israel, however, who would say that this is the opportunity. This is the window. What was started back in June with those 12 days of war can be finished if Israel has the right plan and Israel is able to execute.
Let's go to the last ditch, Lebanon, north of Israel. Jonathan Shanzer, he is the executive director of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.